Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back. Welcome back to the Witchology Podcast. We are here with episode number 10 already. How amazing is that? So, I'd like to welcome you to this episode and thank you very much for being here and spending this time with me this week. It's always lovely to see you. It's always lovely to get a cup of tea and spend this time together, or, let me join you on your car ride to work or something. Let's get into it. This episode is centered around raising little witches. And I think this is relevant to everyone, you know, regardless of whether or not you have your own children. There are always people in our lives, so it might be nieces and nephews, it might be people that you teach or mentor or engage with in other sort of, you know, community ways maybe. But also, we were all children once, you know, and there are some things that we like to nurture sometimes about, you know, things, giving ourselves what we needed as kids, if we couldn't get it by other means. let's not hang about. Let's start with our book review. Our book review this week is The Tarot Deck Mess by Sarah Beck. This is a children's book due to be published by Moondust Press this spring. That's really difficult to say. let's have a bit of a synopsis. Written as a divinatory primer for children 4 and up, The Tarot Deck Mess uses easy-to-remember poetry paired with strong affirmations to guide readers through the Fool's Journey card by card. Acting as a gentle intro for kids and a helpful reminder for parents, The Tarot Deck Mess creates an opportunity for witches to include little ones in their tarot practice. So I had the absolute honour of receiving a digital advanced reader copy of this book, and I'm just so excited to tell you all about it. This book seeks to teach our little witches about tarot, you know, what it is, etc., and does so by presenting the major arcana through the Fool's Journey. It's super cute. It starts with a little girl discovering a tarot deck on her mum's altar, and being the curious little witch that she is, she tries to climb up and get it, but ends up taking a bit of a tumble and spilling the cards all over the place. So her mum comes in then and is like, wowzers, let me help you clean this up, and then does so by, taking her daughter through the cards. I absolutely love the way this has been presented. There's a card per page with a very brief and very accessible little snippet of the meaning of each card, followed by a corresponding affirmation. I don't know if this was the intention, but how freaking amazing is it that it literally becomes a deck in itself, like a combo of cartomancy and bibliomancy, because you can flip to a page at random and that page is your card of the day. How cool is that? The book that's just, it would just live on your altar now, wouldn't it? But yeah, I think this is a super accessible and super inclusive way of teaching our little ones about tarot, and, does so in a really memorable way. Honestly, it's a great tool for little witches and big witches alike. If you're someone who finds or is finding, you might be at the start of your tarot journey or a ways into it, but always struggle, to memorize the cards if that's the way you're kind of going about it. If you're someone who finds that quite difficult or can be quite challenging, then this book and its sort of visualizations and affirmations, I really do think could help. One of my other, my other interesting observations, I think, from reading this is, and actually just generally about Moondust Press and all the books that they do, is how good they are for some, inner child work too. So if you didn't grow up in a witchy, pagan, Wiccan, or generally, earth-based spiritual environment, and you'd have loved books like this as a kid, yeah, I reckon just, get yourself some witchy or pagan children's books and spend some time, with your inner child, healing and engaging with some learning and practices that give you that kind of soft, nurturing space. Yeah, I think this gives a really good opportunity for that. I don't know the exact publish date yet of this, but which I probably should have checked before before I recorded this. But yeah, if you go and follow Moondust Press on Instagram and TikTok, then you can stay up to date with what's going on and see all the releases and everything. I highly rate this book. I don't have kids myself, so I'm not reviewing it from a parent's perspective, if that makes sense. I'm reviewing it from an auntie's perspective. and, you know, generally as a witch. But yeah, do you know what? I'm going to give this 5 stars on the children's book scale. Actually, for just 5 stars overall, because I think I'm going to end up using it quite a lot. While I have you here, I would love to tell you all about Lunology. Lunology is a, well, I say brand new, we launched it just before Christmas, a lovely little monthly zine centered all around the astrological movements of each month. Starting from the new moon, taking you all the way through the cycle, we give you tarot spreads, spell ideas, ritual ideas, information on the astrological movements. The next issue for Aquarius season is out this Saturday. My guest this week is Andrea Stein. Andrea is the founder of Moon Dust Press, an independent publisher specializing in modern witchcraft for kids. They pride themselves on creating resources for children being raised in homes practicing nature-based spiritualities, breaking down stereotypes about witchcraft and pagan practices in children's literature, and providing, well, much needed diverse representation. So welcome, Andrea. Thank you for being here.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
So, let's get started with it straight off the bat. Tell us more about Moon Dust Press and where did it come from? What sort of inspired you to start a witchcraft children's book publisher?
Yeah, so I am a mom. I have 3 kids now, but when I started Moon Dust Press, I had 1 daughter. She was in kindergarten at the time, and I had been looking for a long time, a few years, for books for her that represented our family's practices and my practices. And there were a few things out there that were, you know, very few and far between, and that some of them that were kind of dated, and there was a lot that was Wiccan leaning, and there just wasn't really anything new coming out. So I decided to write my own first book that I self-published, and I came up with the name Moondust Press, and I started self-publishing my own material under that name. And then it sort of grew from there. And once I realized how much of a market there was and how much interest there was from other parents and other people that had written things and been working on things and said, I had the same idea. I've been working on this for years. I wanted to see this. We started publishing other people's materials, and now we are still a small boutique independent publisher, but we work on a traditional publishing model.
I love that. And so do you illustrate them as well? Or do you have like an in-house illustrator that does those? Because they're always so beautifully illustrated.
I don't. So I match each one to an illustrator. I typically find artists via social media or people that submit portfolios to us. And then we keep like a list of those for reference. But typically each book kind of lends itself to a different illustration style. So I like to find someone that matches each one. I just last week actually signed someone for a new book that works in lino cuts. So I'm really excited. It's going to be a board book, but she carves it all in lino cut and then prints it. So everything, I kind of try to find that right unique style and color palette that fits it, but I don't do the art myself.
Oh, that's amazing. Oh, I love lino cuts as well. That's going to be stunning. I know. I don't have kids, but I'm going to buy one anyway.
Yes, I know. I get that comment a lot from people that say, I don't have children, but I want to buy this. Or is it okay if I buy this for myself as an adult? I don't think picture books have a high age limit. I buy myself beautiful picture books all the time, and I keep them separate from my kids because it's an art form separate from being just something for children.
Absolutely. And do you know what? I think it's something that you can use in a lot of like inner child work as well. Because if we think about that, for a lot of us, having access to books like that wouldn't have been, unless our parents were also kind of witchy, or they were witches, or, you know, pagan, or any kind of that sort of way leaning spiritually. I don't know, it kind of feels that I get the feeling of like, yeah, opening up one of those books and thinking, oh yeah, little me would have loved this.
Absolutely. And I mean, that's part of it too. It's absolutely healing for me and validating for me, that I know that they're books that would have been really valuable to me as a child. And I know that being able to see that for other kids and being able to either see their current practices reflected in a book or be introduced to something new and realize that this is a possibility for them, I think that's really special. And I think it's something that was missing from the market. So that was kind of the gap that we were trying to fill.
Yeah, absolutely. Amazing. So when you started, I mean, obviously you would have used your own books, first of all, to work with your own little one. what difference did you see? I don't know, what is the difference you saw in your own children as you started engaging them in these, with these books and in these practices and things?
Yeah, they ask a ton of questions. My own kids, and then since then I do, like around holidays, I'll do things at my daughter's school. So I'll go in and I'll read a Yule book, or oh, we'll come in around in the springtime and we'll read at spring equinox and we'll talk about the Wheel of the Year. And kids are fascinated. And the number one thing I think that is clarified for them and seeing it presented this way is the difference between witches in movies and TV shows and other books, the way that they're used to seeing them presented, and what a real witch could be like or look like. And even my own kids, knowing that I am pagan, knowing that I call myself a witch, still see that reflected all the time. They still watch Hocus Pocus. They still see all of these witches in black hats and all of these things. And it's still valuable for kids that are being raised in the community to see a different media depiction than the normal scary Halloween witch or typical witch in the black hat with the pointed nose.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It's amazing that your children's school kind of make that space for you in that way and have that space to talk about different spiritualities.
For other people that live in other parts of the United States, it might not be such a big deal, but we live in Texas and it's generally very politically conservative, very Christian. And it does feel really wonderful to be allowed into my kids' school with these books. My daughter attends a charter school. I don't know if they would be so welcome within our public school system. So I'm very grateful to the school administration and teachers that we do have. I hear a lot from people at markets, like when I sell books in person, I'll hear from people that say, wow, I wish I could put this in my classroom, but I would be fired. Or I wish I could put this in my classroom, but parents would lose their minds. So yes, I've been very lucky to find space for it. And we have a very inclusive school that likes to bring in people to talk about all of their winter holidays and all of their holidays around the year. But it's definitely a touchy subject, which just, it kind of gets at the whole thing that people either love it or they hate it. And they either see it as a reflection of their practices and something that they can use, or they think it's demonic and evil. And yeah, it's a line.
Yeah, it's so interesting, isn't it? And considering the roots of Christianity and just the, I don't know, the diversity of religions and spiritual practices across, it's just so, bizarre to me that paganism and Wicca and all of that just, I don't know, are so easily rejected when other, I don't know, where other religions aren't, do you know what I mean? It's sort of like, why is it okay for you to find?
It's so fringe. It's still considered so even alternative. So when you go into, we have one of the biggest independent bookstores in the country here in Austin, and they have a big children's section and a children's religion section. And it's probably 4 or 5 full shelves of Christian books and kids' Bibles. And then there's a small section on Islam, and there are Jewish books, and they have books on Buddhism and Hinduism. And they have zero pagan books whatsoever. And I even asked at one point, I said, do you have any pagan children's books? And they said, I don't know what that is, the person working there. So it's still you know, it's funny. It's millions of people. It is in the United States, the fastest growing religious group by percentage. And it's still considered very fringe, very weird. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so interesting. And I guess it comes from, I don't know, does it come from a place of fear? It's sort of like this hangover from moving from paganism, like old paganism, way, you know, talking centuries and centuries back, into kind of Christianity as we know it today. I don't know whether it's something like that.
Oh yeah, I think so. And even Satanic Panic and looking at the 80s and 90s and what things looked like here. And then I think, right, the 90s and early 2000s, we started to have kind of a swing back towards kind of more nature-based religion. And now we're just having this wave of Christian nationalism. And yeah, I think it's control and fear and seeing things that are outside of the major religion is threatening and scary, especially when those things like witchcraft make people feel really empowered. Mm-hmm. And those are people who attend protests and resist government in other types of ways. So I think a lot of it is fear-based.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Oh, it's just also such deja vu with it, isn't it? It's like, we've been here before. We have been here before.
It's, I have to decide, right, when I meet, for example, when I meet a new mom at school and I'm at an elementary school in Texas and they say, what do you do? And I say, I write children's books. And they say, oh, that's so cool. What type of children's books? And there's always this second where I have to decide, like, is this going to be a bad choice? Is this a safe person to share with? And I generally just tell people, I generally just tell everyone. And if I get a bad reaction, I won't bring it up. Maybe I won't bring it up again. But it has been interesting. I haven't lived in Texas my whole life. So I was raised in a very liberal state. I was raised in California, and San Francisco is kind of a witchy pagan little haven there. So to come out of it and see more of resistance to that has been interesting.
Yeah, well, it reminds me, I don't know, I feel very lucky to be in, I mean, the UK obviously has its problems with tolerance in areas, but I feel very lucky to be in the UK and not worry so much. I mean, I still don't talk about witchcraft generally when I like two people are not at work, but I definitely feel lucky that if I did, it feels like there isn't so much of the like really militant Christians, mm-hmm. I should say. Yeah. to kind of deal with, because I know anyone that follows you on TikTok will see that you get a lot of, I don't want to swear, but just horrible comments from people, but you handle it so well and so, with so much dignity. But yeah, what kind of crosses your mind whenever you get those kind of things? Do you kind of get exhausted by it, or is it part of it?
Yes and no. I professionally come from a marketing background. So when I see those comments, part of me says, great, because my base of people that follow me agree with what I'm doing and they feel as passionately about it as I do. So when I, for example, post a TikTok video responding to these really hateful, violent Christian comments that I get from people wishing death on me, for example, that just makes people buy my books more, and that's great for me from a business standpoint. It's very exhausting emotionally. And usually if I have a video that does really well and gets a lot of views and gets a lot of negative comments, I will take like at least 2 weeks, if not a month off from TikTok. And I just won't even open the app and I won't even post it, because after that, I'm worn out after it. So if you go through my TikTok videos, like there are month long gaps in posting, and they're usually after I have a video that does really well, because it's not just TikTok, right? TikTok is linked to everything else. So then people get your email address and then people are contacting you directly. People tell me that I am disgusting. People tell me that I shouldn't be a parent, that I shouldn't have access to children, that I'm a child abuser. Meanwhile, every other religion in the world has books and material to share their faith with their children. I think if people actually took the time to look at the books and see what's in them, they would realize that they're perhaps not what they think. But I think those are also people that generally aren't even worth fighting with. I'll use the video response in like a funny marketing way to send it out to my people, but I'm not going to try to have a legitimate conversation where I try to change their mind, because mm-hmm. I know I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, it's one of you know, it's always those kind of keyboard warriors who it doesn't matter what you say, they are never going to listen to your side of the coin.
Yeah, a lot of it is anonymous, which is kind of a TikTok phenomenon. It's not something that I deal with as much on any other social media platform, but on TikTok, people, kind of like Reddit, will just say whatever they want, and they feel very emboldened to tell you how they feel.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's okay.
Yeah, it's absolutely heartbreaking.
I just hit 100,000 TikTok followers this morning, actually.
Well done. Amazing.
You know, sometimes it's okay when people are riled up in the comments, but I do think it's helped a lot of the right people find me, mm-hmm. because it's helped my videos get wider reach, and then they end up reaching the right people. But mm-hmm. when one of them hits the wrong side of the algorithm, it's messy.
Yeah. So do you take yourself through any like kind of rituals or spells or anything like after those kind of moments to kind of cleanse yourself or kind of detach from anything?
Especially around my phone. I do like a lot of cleansing and protection and warding around my phone specifically every day, because it's always on me. And right, my kids are like, "You're always on the phone." I'm like, I'm so sorry. It's my job. I'm working. The majority of what I do for my job is marketing and social media. So I have to be on my phone sometimes, as much as I don't want to be. I try to keep it to certain times of the day. I try to keep spaces that are completely free of that. I try to keep it out of my bedroom, especially.
Well, that's good. That's good. So it's just so heartbreaking. I can't get over it. Just people are so horrible. And TikTok is a hellscape.
It is. And there's kind of two types of negative criticism that I get on TikTok. There's the just like overtly negative comments that usually come from Christian people that are like, "What you're doing is wrong, evil, demonic, satanic, you should die." And then there's people that are either also pagan or they're atheists, and they just think that sharing any type of religion with children is wrong. And they don't think that children should be exposed to any sort of religious material. And those are the cases where I generally do engage, and I think it's more worthy of conversation, because I think that opinion tends to stem from kind of a Christian background and sometimes from religious trauma of thinking that any sharing of religious beliefs with children is indoctrination or telling them, this is what you have to believe, this is correct. And that's not what I'm doing. I'm telling them this exists. This is a real thing. This is something you can look into. This is something you can practice. Even with my own kids, I'm saying, this is what I do. This is what I chose for myself as an adult. And these are other practices. My kids have books on Judaism, Hinduism, Buddhism, Islam, Christian. At one point, my daughter had me buy her a junior Bible. She was curious, and I absolutely did it because it would be hypocritical of me not to. And I want them to be exposed to all faiths. And I think that this is part of the problem, that when we don't have these books, people are ignorant of what these religions are at all. And then they're scared of them because they think they're evil and bad. Mm-hmm. And then we have all of this conflict. And I think if we just cut it off at the beginning with knowledge, with children, by showing them all of these different options and showing them that they can choose things, we wouldn't end up with a lot of ignorant, intolerant adults.
Yeah, absolutely. And resentful adults who didn't get the choice. And you know, I think you hit the nail on the head where they might be saying, no, don't share these things, or don't be sort of forcing, in inverted commas, this onto children because of, like you say, their own trauma of being forced into one sort of spiritual.
Yeah, and that's always the comment I get, that I don't think you should force any religion on kids, or it's wrong to push this on children. And I say it's not pushing something on a child to read them a book. It's not pushing, it would be if I said, here's a book, this is the only book in the world, this is the correct book, and if you don't follow this book, something bad is going to happen to you.
I wonder what that sounds familiar.
Exactly. And that's not what I'm doing. And that's not what most pagan parents that I know and that I am in community with are doing. Almost everyone I know who is pagan is doing the same thing, where they're giving their children options and they're showing them what they do and including them in a gentle, child-friendly way as a family, and then giving them the option to make the choice of what they want to do later in life.
Yeah, absolutely. Exposing them to lots of different options, choices, you know, and that's the biggest gift we can give, you know, to children, is give them choice.
Yeah. I'm Jewish. So if my kids are interested in Judaism, we celebrate Jewish holidays. I have no idea what they're going to choose to do in their teenagerdom and their adulthood later in life. I'm happy for them regardless, right? I'm here for it. This is for me. This is where I have found my personal power and magic. This is what I believe in. I can't dictate what that is for anyone else. So I think that when people do share those comments, like, this is indoctrination, you're forcing your children to do what you do, I think they're just not seeing the whole picture of how we're actually sharing things.
Yeah, absolutely. So have you had to sort of, I mean, I don't know how old your children are, but have you ever had to sort of brief them on when to speak about it or not speak about it, and like sharing it with their friends and that kind of thing, to kind of, I don't know, protect them in any way? Or
really just my oldest. I have a 9.5-year-old. She's in fourth grade, and she has had interactions with people wherein they, for example, have told her that witches aren't real or that witchcraft isn't real. One of my favorite response ever, when she was in kindergarten, a boy said that to her. He said, witches aren't real. And she said, if you don't believe in witches, then you've never met my mom.
Oh, that's so cute.
I have had to tell her that if she feels like she's in a situation where someone is having a negative reaction or they are making her feel unsafe, to not share or to just stop the conversation, to walk away. But it's not something that has necessarily come up for us a lot. I think more when they're in middle school and high school will be something we'll have to address more. But I also am seeing more and more, like, that age kids, right? High schoolers getting into witchcraft and tarot and all of the things. So I think it's such a Gen Z, and now the younger kids is Generation Alpha, Gen A. But I think we're just going to see more and more people leaning that way. So I'm hoping that it becomes more inclusive for them.
Yeah, and they generally, well, hopefully they're all being raised to be much more tolerant of each other and exposed to kind of all that kind of representation of different types of people and their religious beliefs, spiritual beliefs, you know, everything, different cultures. So hopefully by the time your children are in high school and older, the world will be a very different place. And we'll hopefully,
yes, I know. And I think I'm kind of socially in a bubble where the people that I know are raising their children to be more inclusive. They're raising them with more diverse materials. But I think especially here, there's another set of people who are very, very against that. For example, my books are not super widely distributed, but if they were, I think they would be contested in libraries or schools. I don't think people love to see this kind of stuff. We've, even in Austin, which is fairly liberal for Texas, been dealing with book banning and school boards. So there's a lot of, I don't know. Yeah, I hope that it's the majority of kids, and I hope that it's enough to tip the scale in that direction. But I also know that there are families who are raising their children the opposite way.
Yeah, you're right, you know, because we do get kind of caught in our own echo chambers, don't we? And we kind of interact with the people that kind of think the same way that you do. Yeah. And
especially with social media, right? Because like my TikTok algorithm is, it's all fairly liberal, leftist, witchy, pagan kind of stuff, right? And I don't see the other side. So I don't know. I know it's there. It's lurking.
Oh gosh, that gives me the fear. So do you, and you know, this might be a bit of a personal question, so please feel free to not answer if you don't want to, but do you have you introduced any practices to your children? Is there anything like any kind of like everyday magic or little witchy things that you started doing with them when they were younger? Or, you know, how does that, what does practice look like in the kind of family?
Yeah, it's more, I would say at this point, more everyday magic. I do little things. I'll put little sigils in their jackets that they wear to school or in their lunch boxes or on notes. I have taught my daughter how to make little sigils. I've had her, she's done some of her own spells. The first spell she ever did, she was in kindergarten, and she did a spell that she wanted to like design it herself, and she picked out a little orange candle, and she went through all of my herbs and correspondences, and she did a spell for all of her friends to have a good winter break when they went on like a break from school.
Oh my goodness, my heart.
But
I do
like little things like that around sleeping, right? Like banishment of bad things and monsters around sleeping. Not magic, braids and hair with my daughter, especially. In general, it's more protection-based things I'm doing for them. Mm-hmm. And then for them, it's just more every day. I bake a lot. I bake bread. So that feels especially magical for me to include my kids in too. And I try to, that's more of my daily ritual.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Oh my goodness. That little spell to make her friends have, our classmates have a good winter break is too much for me. I feel like I'm on the maybe it's the point in my cycle, but I feel like I'm on the verge of tears just thinking about that. So sweet.
Oh, I know. And when you let them kind of come up with their own ideas or their own questions, they come up with the coolest stuff. On my podcast, my kids' podcast, it's called Mini Magic. We do a segment at the end where kids record questions and they send in questions. And then I answer them on the air of the podcast. And it is so fun to see, first of all, hearing all their little voices and then seeing like what they're interested in and what they want to learn about and maybe like what misconceptions they have that they want to see reversed. I got one, can boys do magic? Can boys be witches? Now we have a book with a boy main character. That was when I got a lot, especially from parents saying, do you have anything with boys? Do you have anything with boys? Everything I'm seeing is made for girls and I want something for my sons. And I think all books are for everyone. I think you can read boys' books with female main characters, but there is power in seeing that representation on the page. So we have one with a boy main character now and we're working on more.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. That's so nice. And it's so nice for them to have that space and, you know, that where they can ask questions and it's, you know, safe to ask questions and it's encouraged. You're like, it's okay. You're not going to get it. You're not going to do anything wrong because we're finding the right answers and things. So,
and I think a lot of pagan kids are being raised in isolation. I think a lot of us don't have in-person communities with other witches and pagans. I think it's beautiful if you do. I have a few pagan friends in real life. But I think for a lot of us, most of it is via social media and online. And that means that our kids aren't seeing other people doing the same thing and they don't have other kids that are kind of sharing that. So there was one point where we did a book club. We did a Zoom book club where we all read the same graphic novel. It was the Witch Boy graphic novel. And then I got a bunch of kids, like 10 kids on Zoom. And we all talked for like an hour about the book and we asked questions. And then we did an activity. We did sigils. I taught them how to make sigils and we all made them for different words. But seeing things like that and like them getting to talk to each other and when they go off in little side conversations, it's so beautiful. And it's just such a reminder of why I'm doing what I'm doing. And I wish I could just bring everyone together in a big, you know, festival or conference or town that we all live in.
Yeah, that'd be so nice. Oh, amazing. It'll go a long way, like them taking that through with them on their journeys. That's so lovely. Mm-hmm. So for any pagan or, you know, witch parents out there who have yet to, I mean, I know it's kind of inherent because it'll be in your everyday, but if there are any parents out there that are thinking, or, you know, I don't know how to share my practice with my children, I don't know where to get started, what advice would you have for them?
Yeah, not to promote myself, but I think that books are the easiest way to share things, anything really, any idea with kids, especially picture books. And just having them ask questions, asking them if they have any questions about what you're doing, trying to intentionally include them more. I know the times my kids are the most involved are around holidays, just because it tends to be the easiest to like set up and plan activities. We're coming up to Yule, right? There's so many activities around the solstice and making an Advent spiral and baking sun bread and all of these little things. So I think holidays are a really easy way to start to incorporate things, and reading for sure.
Yeah.
I love the book. It's a little older now, but the book Circle Round by Starhawk, and I believe Anne Baker. There's a few authors, Anne Baker. It's Wiccan leaning, but it is a book that's written for parents. It's a very thick book that kind of goes through the year and includes like all of these read aloud stories and activities and things that you can do with your kids. The subtitle is Raising Children Under the Goddess Path or something. And that's wonderful. I think that's what a lot of pagan parents would refer to as their quote unquote Bible. But it's, like I said, it's slightly dated. It is Wiccan leaning, but it's a fantastic resource.
A good place to start, at least. Kind of formulate your own path from there.
Yes. Maybe there will be a newer version of a book like that at some point in the future.
From Moon Dust Press, maybe.
I might have it outlined in the notes app of my iPhone.
I love that. It will be. Okay, well, this has been really interesting, really fascinating. I am not a parent myself, but I have two nieces and two nephews, and my niece and nephew, eldest two, they're five, twins. And I started kind of, since they've sort of been coming over, started kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Like introducing them to, they're just very curious, you know, they come into this room, you can see where I'm sat, where I've got my altar and I've got crystals everywhere. And they're kind of all like curious and asking those kind of questions, but they're not my kids. So I feel like I can't go too far into detail. You know what I mean?
That's another thing that I hear a lot from people at markets. They're like, oh, I wish I could buy this, or I want to buy this for my nieces or nephews or another child in my life, but I don't know if their parent would be okay with it. And yeah, you kind of need buy-in on two levels, which is not always the case.
No.
But crystals are a great way to, like a great, easy introductory way, because kids love them. They're colorful, they're small, they can be picked. If you use tumbled stones, they're like gentle and easy to pick up and they won't hurt you. Make sure they do not swallow them. But that's a really good one.
Yeah, I was a bit brave when they came around last time, because my niece, she'd hurt her elbow, she fell over, and she was very much like making a big deal out of it. She's like, oh, I need another wet cold paper towel to put on my elbow. And I was like, do you know what, I've got something even better. So I had an aura spray that I keep on my altar, so I'm going to spritz you with this, because I just smell all these lovely new smells. And I gave her a little tumblestone amethyst and was like, if you hold this, it will help you feel better. You feel better.
And right, it works. That kind of stuff really works to calm kids down when they are panicking or in crisis. I think that they're much more open to believing in the power of anything metaphysical, and yeah, they'll generally just go with it and realize that it works.
Yeah, because it kind of helps them not to get too philosophical about it, I suppose, but reflect and become a bit more like, think of it in a different way and maybe a bit more meditative in that kind of, in the processing of whether it's pain or anything, they start processing it in a different way. So those little prompts, you know, are quite good.
Yeah. That's one thing. That's in another one. So we have one book series that's on the Wheel of the Year, and every book is like that. It's like a calming strategy, essentially, or like a problem solving strategy. So the first one is for Ostara and spring, and she breaks some of her eggs that she's making, and she has her day ruined, and she has to do deep breathing to calm down. So those kind of meditative strategies are included in those Wheel of the Year books and some other books. And I think that they are really, really helpful for kids. Even timing, we're working on the Samhain book now that has counted breathing, where you count your breaths for a certain time in and out. And there's a lot of little strategies like that that aren't necessarily witchcraft or magic, but that are really grounding and helpful.
I mean, I know I'm biased, but how can anyone begrudge that for children? Do you know what I mean? Like, how can you have a problem with that when it's something so...
Yeah. And I think from their perspective, they're saying, this is actually an Amazon review I've gotten before. It said it is wickedness in an inviting package. Like, they're trying to package it up in a beautiful way that looks pretty and nice, but it's actually the devil hiding under there. So that's kind of the case where there's no use fighting it, right? I can say it's really just meditation and visualization and energy work. And they say, well, that's not God.
Oh, wow. I mean, if it's the devil that's making me want, or is that wants me to have a happy life, then yeah, I'm with you. I'm afraid.
Yeah, my witchcraft story is very personal. And I kind of found magic and paganism and witchcraft at a very dark point in my life when I was going through a domestic violence situation. And it's something that has been incredibly empowering for me at that point as a single parent. And it's, really, really improved my life. So if they begrudge me that, that's okay.
Yeah, wow. It is just, it's huge, isn't it? My goodness. Is there anything in terms of raising little witches that you want to cover before we wrap up?
I would just say to be open-minded and to let your kids kind of guide you. If you listen to them, they will tell you what they're interested in.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
They know.
And they're smart as well. Everyone sort of underestimates kids, but they know. And they're so observant.
I got a comment yesterday that said, I think this is fine for sharing with kids, but maybe 12 plus. And I thought that was so interesting. What happens at 12? Why not start from the beginning? Why reach a point of ignorance and then at 12 say, oh, by the way, all of these hundreds of religions exist. You need to. I think it's better to just start from the beginning, weaving it in as a natural thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're so receptive to things, aren't they? Especially at those younger ages. They're so curious, and I don't know why you wouldn't sort of utilize that and help, I don't know, nurture them at that age.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, in terms of anything else too, we have, I have one author, Sarah Beck. Her book is coming out in the spring, and it is a tarot book. And she creates a ton of content on Instagram about reading tarot with your children. And it's very useful. If you're interested in that, it's something most people probably haven't considered, but that's another kind of gentle introductory way to bring things in for them. So I would suggest you check her out on any of her socials. Her social profiles are Nine of Wands.
Oh, amazing. Oh, I'm definitely going to do that myself as well. That sounds so exciting. Tarot, I think for a lot of us, is a bit of a gateway. Isn't it? Or has been for many witches. Tarot is a bit of a gateway. So that's exciting. Wonderful. Okay. Well, this has been so fascinating. It's been really lovely to talk to you about all of this. I think I feel like we could go on for days.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I have one final unrelated question, and that is if there was going to be a Moondust Press movie about how it came to be and all of I imagine it being a bit of an Erin Brockovich situation.
Oh, one of my favorite. I just made my husband watch that movie for the first time.
It's so good. So good. So I feel like the Moondust Press movie would be a bit of those sort of vibes, I think, with you going into schools and, you know, but who would play you if they made that movie? If I made it, do it.
Wow. That's a good question. I'll give you Anne Hathaway because she is the only celebrity I have ever been told that I look like. And I have repeatedly been told that she looks like me. I think she is a little prettier than me, but I would love a fictionalized version of me to look like her.
I can totally see that actually. Yeah, I would support Anne Hathaway. And I think she would capture your energy quite well as well. It's kind of like an slight etherealness about you.
Yes. The Devil Wears Prada movie with Meryl Streep. Her name is Andy, and I go by Andy in real life too. So I never hear people with that name. And I always, whenever I see that movie and her with that name, I'm like, oh, hi.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, amazing. Yeah, and I'd watch that movie. I think I might make that movie. It might be good. Moondust Press. Starring Anne Hathaway. Sounds great. So thank you so much for taking this time with me. It's been so interesting, or with us, the listeners as well. It's been so interesting. And I hope that any parents listening or future parents or, you know, families with small children can, I don't know, take something into their relationships with the children that they know and love, I suppose.
Me too. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. So thank you very much for tuning in again today. It has been an absolute pleasure. If you like this episode, you can enjoy it ad-free by becoming a Witchology subscriber. Not only do you get access to this podcast and lots of bonus episodes, you will also get a print subscription to our magazine, as well as cauldrons full of additional content on our exclusive members area on the website. Head to www.witchologymagazine.com/subscriptions to find out more. Until next time, goodbye.